I would recommend showing your preteen, early teen children this show.
I don't even know seven guys that I keep together.
Cox Sportif. Hello and welcome. We are back. It is the Baller Lifestyle Podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. I am once again your host, Brian Beckner. Episode 101 of the show, 101 episodes in the books, or 100 in the books. We're on to the second century of shows here, and so much to get to today. A lot of correspondence re our 100th episode, the Beverly Hills 90210 episode. If you haven't checked that out, please do. We're not, no more shows for the rest of the year, so you guys have a chance to get caught up on everything that you're behind on if you're not hashtag Team Current episode. So get with that. Would love your thoughts on episode 100, the 90210 episode, featuring our close friend of the show, Travis Rogers, Working Blue, which everyone loves. A special episode of the show today, as well as we will be discussing the timeless Christmas classic, A Very Brady Christmas. Before we do that, though, a couple sports stories to hit on, a little bit to do. Let me give you the email address if you want to reach out. mailbag@theballerlifestyle.com is the way you do that. You can also leave us a voicemail, some good voicemails on that 100th episode. I thank everyone who reached out for that. 949-464-TBLS is the number if you would like to leave us a voicemail, a brief voicemail. As always, I implore you to like our Facebook page, The Baller Lifestyle Podcast on Facebook. Interact with us there. That is where most of the non-show interactions occur. There and Twitter, of course. Joining us now is big show today, a lot happening. Joining me now, as always, Ed Daly, co-host of the program. Ed, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for our special guest.
Me too. Also, I think this might be the third episode in a row.
Record breaker.
It is. We have the Baller Lifestyle Podcast, pop culture / bachelor correspondent on the program for the entirety of episode 101. Of course, I'm talking about our very own Fancy Sauce. How you doing, Fancy?
Hi guys, you can't do a show without me, huh?
It's true. It's like you're like an infection. You're like sepsis.
It's not the first time I've heard that.
You're just here to stay. And
you charmer.
Joining us.
That's how he talks to me all the time.
Joining us, very special guest. If you are someone that listens to the show regularly, you will recognize this person. Of course, I am talking about media icon, a guy that is known around the world. He acts in Lifetime movies. He is a special, special human being, and we're lucky to have him. Of course, I'm talking about the great Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you?
Hey, y'all. How are you?
Jason.
Good to have you on the show, my friend. Let's get into it. We need to catch up on some emails. Of course, the bulk of the program is going to be our discussion of the holiday classic, A Very Brady Christmas. It is holiday season. It is the time when all of those special... Remember you used to look forward growing up? And I know you remember this, Ed.
Sure.
You used to look forward to... I remember there was a Yogi Bear Christmas special.
Yeah.
It was on once a year, and I would fucking get so excited. And
they had the whole gang there, like Snagglepuss.
You were probably like 13, 14?
Yeah, I was probably like... And
Evans to Murgatroyd.
Yeah, we didn't have DVRs back then. We didn't have VCR. It wasn't like you could just pop in the fucking DVD or look at it on your computer. You had to dial up into the TV at the exact moment that shit was on. And really, like, none of that stuff was very entertaining, but we were stupid and we were children, so we would dial into it like it was the best thing ever. And I remember being very excited about A Very Brady Christmas, and I'm happy to discuss it today. Yes, Ed?
My kids were watching that Yogi special tonight.
But, like, online. It wasn't on TV, was it?
It was one of those $3 DVD purchases.
Shut up.
Yeah, it was at, like, you know, the Target. You know, when you walk in and they've got all these like random DVDs.
It's basically exactly the same plot as The Grinch.
There's a
guy
that they have to convince to like Christmas.
The guy is like, you know, 2 feet tall and a foot and a half of it is beard.
Yes, yes. Well, I really like that growing up. Okay, but let's get into some emails. Let's clean house because we didn't get to talk anything but 90210 last episode. So let's clean up all of the email correspondence we have here. First, amigos, when Brian brought up his grandma asking that if that how that lady got pregnant from behind, it brought a tear to my eye. Grams de Foles found out about my first three-way when Grams, this guy, John.
How about the humble brag of all time right
yes,
there?
Yes, this is what people like to do on the show. When Grams de Foles found out about my first three-way, she had major questions on how that is even possible. It makes me sad because I wasn't there when this woman, born in Mexico and worked so hard to get to America, was asking my aunt and cousin how it was possible, and now she's gone. Let this be a reminder to share everything with your abuelas and abuelos. We don't have them for long. Your favorite Mexican, John de Fullerton. This is something people like to do on this show, Ed. It's they like to send emails where they just quietly brag about. All he wants to do is tell us he's had.
We don't know the details of who was in that three-way. Could have been Chuck and Steve. Could have been on a spit roast.
A three-way is not you and both of your hands. Right. FYI.
Also, that his aunt and cousin knew about it is a little odd. Would you agree, Jason Stewart?
And John from Fullerton, he's my brethren, right? He went to like Cal State Fullerton, and every time I tweet, he responds.
Is that
like,
true? Yeah, I didn't know that.
I don't know if he went there or he just really likes to associate himself with Fullerton and me.
No, I happen to know that he did attend Cal State Fullerton. I believe he wrote for the Daily Titan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So I know this gentleman, and that I thought that email was completely made up. None of that was true, correct?
Yeah, I think you're probably okay. Right.
This
sounds
like Penthouse Forum type
yes,
stuff.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Okay, another email. Brian, Ed, and Kate. Rights of Bill here. Hashtag team current episode. Hashtag team every episode. Hashtag centennial team TBL listener.
Hey, Bill.
Congrats on getting to 100. I've got a couple of questions for the 90210 panel. This came in post recording of the 90210 episode, but we'll be able to answer these. I was also a show watcher, but had to quit as it eventually drifted too far from what initially attracted me. So question one. What season is where you would tell someone who has never seen it to stop watching? And question two, what character alive at the end of the series is most likely to die first and how would they meet their demise? Thanks, guys. And here's to another 100. That's from @writesabill. Ed, I'll let you go first since you're the expert. What season would you tell people to stop watching the show and who that lived to see the end of the series died first?
Well,
and how?
Obviously, I watched through the end because I had invested so much time.
So you would never tell anyone to stop.
And also, the last couple of years is where Gina Kincaid was on, who is arguably the hottest chick on the show, or at least the top three in the history of the show. But if you had to pick a moment where things just took an ugly turn, it's when party guy Steve Sanders started shacking up with single mom and eventual two-time Oscar winner Hillary Swank.
Wow.
Carly. Wow. She was awful. That domesticated Steve Sanders because he's shacking up with a crummy Hillary Swank. As for who would die, that's an easy one. Dylan McKay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're hooked on smack, the odds are heavily stacked against you from kicking that thing for good.
I didn't realize Dylan McKay was hooked on smack. Kate, you are also an expert. Would you like to field this question?
I am not an expert. Mm. And
I mean, you were a watcher.
I was not enough of a watcher to be able to tell you what season it started to go downhill.
Yes.
What was the second part of the question?
Who
was going to die?
Who
lived to the end but would die first? And how?
Probably David Silver.
Yeah, you got to go David Silver here. He was up to some bad behavior. Plus, everyone hated him.
Unless somebody just murdered Andrea, which would be justified.
Well, she could have died of old age.
She could have died of old age in college.
David Silver still on drugs? I think he would have a relapse.
But I feel like as every new drug came on the scene, he would get on it.
Right.
So he's probably on OxyContin now.
Yeah.
And died of it.
Yeah, I would say an Oxy OD.
Jason Stewart, were you a 90210 watcher?
No, I did, but it was much more casually than you guys. I was impressed with the last podcast. Your knowledge and depth was mine. Impressive. Well, the podcast in general.
Oh, right. Ed and Travis.
Our collective.
Ed and Travis.
It was impressive. I definitely take kind of your leisurely interest in it.
Right. You know a little bit, but not a lot, which is respectable.
Could I point out though, and this is a sidebar. I did like the one episode where the students dealt with issues that were well older than them. Like they dealt with real adult issues that high schoolers would never be faced with. Do you remember that one episode?
Oh, good one. Good one. Now, Jason, Travis noted that he would watch 902 in his dorm room with other dudes. You are famous for watching pornography in your dorm room with other dudes. Is that so? Similarly, while he was getting ready to go out, he was watching 90210 with his bros. You and your bros were watching porn.
Yeah, I mean, I could claim that my activity was very masculine.
That's right. Absolutely.
Hey, okay. Everybody get out the dicks. Yes. Okay. Totally cool.
Not gay in any way. Okay, here's another one. Guys, 100th episode was knocked out of the park. Having Travis show his more seedy side is a real treat. When you drop the refund gap reference, the what? Specifically, timestamp 4355 when he drops the oh. Keep it up. Lots of laughs. Thanks, Pete. Here's another one. Ballers. This episode was outstanding. I can't wait for the link to Beckner's workout video. Will his trainer get jail time for her incompetence? I will also purchase some of that rye and a baller shirt. That's from Andy in Denver. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
She should be in trouble for that.
I agree, Ed. Oh, she better not ever cross paths with me.
Yeah. You're not.
I have some words
it
for does, her.
It's an unfortunate situation. I agree. Okay, here's another one. Brian/Ed. You mentioned nipples the other day, and it got me thinking about the two biggest cleavage letdowns in my limited memory. As we all know, nipples can make or break a pair of melons. You know, melons, great. I have not heard them called melons in a while.
Because no one calls them melons.
Well, I like it. I give them props for that.
Yeah, I'm in favor of bringing back the 1987 reference.
Absolutely. Yeah, nipples like can it. Make or break a pair of melons.
If you're a guy out there, don't ever say to a girl, like, nice melons, okay?
How about just, yams?
That's a tip from me. Yes. From me
like
to you.
Yams.
Free tip.
Is that all right?
I go with the old school, the 50s cans.
Cans,
look at the cans on that one.
No.
Yeah.
The two pepperonis that stick out for me are Marissa Miller and Emily Ratajkowski. Someone told me there is a surgery that can be done to fix this. That true? Maybe a question for Fancy. Best, Reed in Houston. Okay. I think I would have noticed if she had odd nipples because she's got fantastic tits.
Yeah, she does.
She's really got some of the best tits going. Not the best. Some of the best.
I'd like to. Can I just step in here?
Yes,
I've actually seen long time ago though. I've seen Marissa Miller's boobs, bare boobs in person.
What? Do tell.
Where?
She did a photo shoot for a website that I worked for years ago. That I was creative director for the photo shoot.
Yes.
And it was a bikini shoot. It was long before she was a Sports Illustrated model.
Blink. Fancy sauce dropping names again. Okay, continue.
I'm not dropping names. Yep. I'm just, you know, I've got some context here.
Okay, go on.
I got some context here. I've seen her boobs and they're small but perfect.
Small?
Yeah,
I wouldn't say small.
I wouldn't either. I mean, well, some people like Tommy Lee would
medium.
Peter North's cock.
She has some perfect medium
boobs. That guy's got a small dick. You know, it's like.
She doesn't have big boobs. She has some medium boobs.
I mean.
And they're pretty perfect.
Gauge them above medium.
Yeah, they're above medium.
And I think her nipples are fine. Like, I don't have an issue with her nipples. Or I'm looking at them here on the internet, and I don't have a problem with them.
So what size boobs are big then? If hers are big, what size do they begin getting big?
C
and above. C and above is big.
Jason Stewart, would you agree?
Jason, raise the bar a full cup size on that one. I would call Kate, D big.
You're with Kate McManus that D's are big.
Yeah, right? I mean, C is closer to average, right? No,
right. I mean,
what?
Yes, I agree.
No. I say B's.
I mean,
there.
I think a C is a nice. Any chick packing a C is doing good. Okay. Thanks for the email, Reed. Another one. After Ed so nicely shamed my dear, sweet, crazy mother for crushing on Willem Dafoe a few episodes back, I must shift shame to a more deserving person, Neil deGrasse Tyson. In a world full of large egos, this guy needs the infinity that is our universe to make enough room for his. He's bulletproof because he's a scientist for the BuzzFeed and Facebook generation. That might be the best insult I've ever
heard.
He's
such a piece of shit, this guy.
People line up to hear this jerk-off debunk Transformers 4. He has universe vanity plates for his car. Quote, folks at home, don't be scared. Old Neil will be fine. This car isn't an evil robot. Come back tomorrow and we'll discuss why the Millennium Falcon is better for space travel than the Starship Enterprise. Fuck you. Neil deGrasse Tyson, I hope you get anally raped by a dolphin. This is really the only scientific mystery that I want him to unravel. Side note, don't Google search dolphin rape and leave it on in the background while you do anything. The noises are terrifying. Jake from Jersey City, personal friend of Ed Daly,
my
lashing
boy.
Out.
My wow. Boy. And I could not agree more.
You also hate Neil deGrasse Tyson? He's awesome.
This whole notion that we need to have some sort of rock star scientist, he can go fuck himself, this guy. Because Jake is right. He's got to be like, hey, guess what? Star Trek could be, you know, who's stronger? Who's got more blasters, the Enterprise or the Millennium Falcon? Like, just use your brain power towards something positive, not being a rock star. And the fact that he hosts some sort of talk show, anyone who watches that is an animal.
Wow, wow. To not popular in the North New Jersey area.
Rockstar. Fuck you.
Jason Stewart, do you have thoughts on Neil deGrasse Tyson? Do you also say fuck you to him?
Dude, it's like you're talking a different language to me. I have to Google Neil deGrasse. Why should I know this guy?
He's
you shouldn't. That's the point. He's a
he's an astrophysicist.
He's an astrophysicist, and he wears crazy vests.
Yeah, he wears
and ties.
Vests, and he's a black man, and he knows about scientists.
Gentleman. Oh, is he on that Bill Maher show every once in a while?
Yes, he comes on Bill Maher. Mm-hmm. He breaks it down. The fucking guy knows a lot about the universe. He has a massive brain. I fucking love the guy. I think Neil deGrasse Tyson is awesome. Yeah. I disagree with Jake from Jersey City.
Garbage man.
And although I don't disagree with Jake from Jersey City's mom, because I would also like to fuck Willem Dafoe. Okay, excellent emails from everyone. I really appreciate all the correspondence. Please feel free to reach out again. mailbag@theballerlifestyle.com. We love hearing from our listeners. Ed, this is a sports talk show.
Yeah.
I know we got to talk Brady Bunch, but there were a couple of stories.
Jarring stories.
NBA this week that were, yes, as you put it, jarring, disturbing, odd, interesting, both shockingly having to do with dudes named Derek. Please hit us. What is going on in the world of sports?
All love follow-up stories.
That's true.
We get some clarity on a story we talked about a couple months ago. Well, here's a follow-up story on our old friend, Mr. Fragile, Derrick Rose. His defense team feels they have a perfect answer to the $20 million sexual assault lawsuit, a sex belt. A woman who says she was the accuser's ex-roommate and coworker is coming forward to defend Rose, claiming she was with the accuser the day after the incident. In legal docs filed by Rose's attorney, the ex-roommate says the accuser showed her a picture that she had sent to Rose wearing the sex belt, a belt the accuser claimed Rose had asked her to buy. The ex-roommate says she had no idea what the sex belt was, so the accuser explained, a sex belt with two bars for the man to hold enables the man to get leverage and hold the bars during the doggy style position.
Wow. Whoa.
Gentlemen.
Whoa.
I don't think this is going to be a question for Fancy. So.
Gentlemen and lady.
Gentlemen, my question to you is this. On a scale of 1 to 10, and 10 being the most effective, how well do your sex belts help you leverage?
That's a great point. Now, I'll be honest. I had, before this week, never heard of a sex belt. I feel like I'm pretty well-versed in the sex toy market. I thought I knew what was out there. I've never heard of one of these sex belts. Jason Stewart.
This is essentially a saddle, right?
I guess. Jason Stewart, you watch a lot of pornography. You watch it with other dudes occasionally. Tell me, are you familiar with a sex belt?
Never heard of it, but my answer to Ed is 10.
Full leverage.
Oh, I see. I've Googled it. It's like, it basically turns your chick like into a motorcycle. Like imagine like handlebars on her waist.
Why do you need the handlebars? Why can't you just hold on to
this
her
is
hips?
This is my one. This is what I wonder.
So dumb.
About like, I don't feel like anybody's got really any problems like maximizing thrust without the sex belt. Kate, do you agree?
Yeah, I do.
It seems restrictive to me. It seems very restrictive. Like you're not given a lot of latitude.
It also, and it seems to me, and we all know who is on the cutting edge of deviance. And of course, I'm talking about the gays. It seems to me that this would be a gay man's idea of a sex toy because they're insatiable. They love to have sex, and they couldn't thrust in deep enough.
Maybe it was a crossover item.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it started out as a gay man's item, and Derek Rose's chick turned him onto it. Would you guys agree?
Well, there were a lot of dudes with Derek Rose that day.
Yeah.
Right? So there was probably a lot of equipment changes.
Yeah, he brought multiple dudes over. Maybe that was the issue that they wanted. It was easier to do the pass around with the sex belt.
Well, according to Urban Dictionary, and I, you know, when I was doing a little research for the story, yeah. I got caught up on a term, and maybe you guys are younger than me, so maybe you know the term train, or they trained her, or got
ran
on a train or something.
Ran a train.
Yeah, ran a train. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so you need at least seven guys. According to Urban Dictionary, you need more than seven guys to qualify as a train.
Oh.
I don't even know seven guys that
no,
I could
I don't either.
Together.
I wouldn't want to see
I
that
feel
many
like
guys
it's in, more than two guys.
I wouldn't want to see that many guys naked. I wouldn't want to see even
I
want to
see
guy
one
naked.
Guy.
Yeah.
You guys better stop watching porn.
Yeah.
Cuz there's naked men.
I
in
think
there.
that's the benefit of the train. Guys.
What, say that again, Jason?
That's the benefit of the train, though, Ed. You don't need to see the guys naked. Like, I guess, you know, a gangbang is like everyone's in the room at once going at it. The train is that they take turns. One in the room, the rest outside
like,
the room.
It's like tag team.
Does the first
tag
guy wear
team.
A doctor
back
hat?
Again.
I don't like this
conversation. The first and last guy. It's a very, very odd story, but I will say this. Derek Rose's whole thing is that this was a consensual thing, and it sounds like it may have been, especially if the roommate is to be believed. And his thing is that she is sour that he didn't pay her back for the sex belt. And this guy's got a fucking $20 million a year contract. Also,
what do sex belts go for? I mean, that can't be more than like $40.
I'm thinking 100 tops.
Okay.
This guy makes $20 million a year. Also, he's met some floozy that's down to fuck him and all his bros. I feel like he should be a little more thankful and spot her a C-note for the sex belt, right? He's a cheap bastard.
Yeah. And after Derek Rose and seven buddies are through with her, I'm guessing she needs the $20 because she's wrecked.
I feel like these guys would get their... They're bringing enough that they're getting maximum thrust with or without the sex belt. That's for sure.
I want an interview with number 6 and 7. What was going through your head?
Tough game of rock, paper, scissors there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rochambeau losers always went paper.
Speaking of, you've never seen my all scissors gambit.
Those guys are all gross.
I agree. I have an all scissors gambit that's unstoppable, Ed.
I'm actually a rock guy. Paper would beat me.
Oh, yeah. Really interesting. Okay. Speaking of Derek's, Ed, you're a huge New York Knicks fan. I only recently discovered that this guy was on the Knicks now.
And he does a good job on the second unit.
Former, like, third or fourth draft pick, Derek Williams. What's going on with him?
Well, after his Knicks beat the 76ers last week, Derek Williams celebrated by going to the Up and Down Club. There he found some women to come home with.
Sounds like a dirty place.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Ed, you live in the New York City area. Have you been to the Up and Down Club?
I haven't been to a club in 20 years.
Okay, continue.
But after a little partying and quite possibly some up and down action at his home, everyone went their separate ways and went to sleep. The only problem for Williams is two of the women left his place with a Louis Vuitton case full of $750,000 worth of jewelry and took it. Williams notified the police, and an investigation is ongoing, although they suspect they didn't use their real names. Brian, Jason, and Kate, for ice aficionados like yourself, where's the best place to store your $750,000 worth of jewelry?
Oh, it's definitely on the floor of the closet.
In the freezer.
How about to say,
get it?
My guess is that after these hoochies made off with all his ice and his thick ropes, that he, before he even called, assuming he had insurance, before he even called his insurance agent, he called his ice and thick ropes guy to order $750,000 more worth of ice and ropes.
My question is, why wasn't he wearing all of his jewels?
Right.
While he was getting busy, because.
Right, you get down to your dick and your diamonds. That's like, the whole thing for guys like that. You can't, you don't take that stuff
off. Wear it all.
Yeah, exactly. Wear all the ice.
Huge fail, and you got what was coming.
Jason Stewart, you mix it up. You are a guy. You probably have Derek Williams' agent's phone number in your Rolodex. You are connected. You are a man about town. You've been in the fucking sports business for longer than any of us can remember. Tell me, you know guys that rock nice tickers. You know guys that are living the baller lifestyle. Does this surprise you at all to learn an NBA player had $750,000 worth of ice on the floor of his closet in a suitcase?
Not one bit. And I wouldn't doubt it if he was wearing it in the club. Like, right. I don't think that they go out with out at least $250,000 worth of jewels on them.
That's right.
The thing about the story that kind of raised my eyebrow a little bit is that he was questioned, I think, the next day at practice or whenever the story broke, he was questioned about the incident. And he's like, I don't have any comment on that. It's still up in the air. Like it's plans for dinner. Yeah. we're still working on that.
He's very nonchalant about
and he's a backup, and this is not a problem for him.
Yeah,
but he was a top three pick, right?
Yeah. I get it, but I'm just saying, like, that's how good life is. That, like, you're a backup in the NBA and a quality backup at this point. He was a shitty starter.
Yeah,
but like the money is so good for this guy that if somebody just robbed me of $750,000, I would be like a little bit upset.
Yeah. And the rumor here is that the two women have run a road game, and isn't there's a report out that there's kind of like a serial nature to this, that they do this, that they bed rich men from clubs and take their money or jewels or whatever. This isn't like the last or the first that they've done of this.
This sounds like wouldn't a pretty run-of-the-mill opportunistic crime to me.
Yeah, sounds like
wouldn't it be
it.
Cool if a sex belt was involved?
Yeah, what if he's like, I'm mostly concerned, like, yeah, you guys can keep the Rolexes, the thick ropes. I'm really just concerned about getting my diamond-studded sex belt back because Derek Rose is bringing a hoochie over this weekend, and we're going to need that. We're running train.
I like it when these athletes or anybody else for that matter does something stupid like this. I really do feel like you're kind of like giving back to the economy. I mean, those women are going to somehow cash those out. The jewels will start to recirculate into the system. When these athletes lose all of their money, it's actually good for the economy.
Trickle down economics.
I'm a root for that.
I get it, Jason. Okay, guys, we need to talk about, I know that's what everyone's tuned in for. It is time. We need to talk about a very Brady Christmas. It is Christmas time. But before we do that, Christmas came early for myself and Ed Daly.
Oh, my. Delicious.
Our dear friends at Herman Marshall Whiskey hooked us up with a little bit of the single malt Herman Marshall. I wasn't even aware that they had a single malt product. Ed?
Yeah, it was a Christmas miracle.
It was. It's the best Herman Marshall I've tasted so far. You guys, Ed and I aren't lucky enough to reside in Texas. Kate McManus doesn't live there either.
Mm-mm.
Jason Stewart, he lives in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. None of us can go out to the store right now and buy Herman Marshall whiskey. You guys live in Texas where Herman Marshall flows like freedom. But through the miracle of podcasting, we're lucky enough to taste that precious Texas single malt and the bourbon and the rye on the regs. I take my neat because it's delicious. Sometimes I put it over ice. Occasionally I'll mix it with a bit of ginger ale. I mix it up. I don't care. I love it. I drink it every weekend. I love Herman Marshall whiskey. It's the official whiskey of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We love having them on the show. That's because Herman Marshall is committed to making the smoothest possible whiskey while ensuring rich flavor and aroma. You guys know I'm into authentic things. Grass-fed beef, three-chord rock and roll, Melissa's Miller's medium-sized natural breasts, and Herman Marshall whiskey. It's my go-to whiskey, and it's distilled right there in the Republic of Texas. Go out and pick some up today. Herman Marshall Smooth Texas Bourbon.
And shout out to the bourbon truffles from Herman Miller.
Oh, yeah, Herman Marshall.
That Brian's been eating.
Not the Herman Miller chair, the Herman Marshall whiskey.
I was just Googling Marissa Miller topless to show you that her boobs are not big.
I mean, okay.
They're plenty.
Agree to disagree. Ed, real or fake?
Let's go. Let's play a game of real or fake. We got two quick ones, and the theme is Christmas. First, we're going to go Christmas albums. Yes. I'm going to give you 5 albums.
Okay.
You're going to tell me which one actually didn't happen.
Okay.
1979, New York Islanders, a Christmas album. 1967.
I can never make that up.
1967, Have a Jewish Christmas.
Okay. That's
1987, true. Max Headroom, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus, You're a Lovely Guy.
For sure. That's real.
1994, Luther Campbell, Christmas at Luke's Sex Shop. And 1988, Alf, A Merry Melmac Christmas.
Mm.
One of those is fake.
Okay, guys, I'm going to need some help on this one. I'm going with the Luther Campbell one.
I'm going to go with Alf because there's no way Alf has a Christmas album.
Jason Stewart?
Yeah, the Alf sounds like the most believable of all.
Also, so I made fun of Jason Stewart or Ed Daly this week on Twitter for he wouldn't be able to hang out with the crew on 90210 because he would need to get home to watch Alf. So I feel like Alf is stuck in Jason Stewart's head.
And how did I respond? Ed Daly,
you're too young. You're not in your 40s. You're too young to have seen Alf. Yeah,
it happened when I was 10.
Yeah,
it's not like you were when you were, you know, much older. It's not like you were slaying chicks at that time either.
No, I watched Alf.
Alf was like a midweek show.
That was
like
a great show.
What else would you do?
Yeah, it was a great show. Alf's a fantastic show. I agree. Okay,
was that a true story, Alf?
Yes, yeah,
it was.
Based on a true story.
He ate cats.
Yeah.
Okay, which is it?
Fake one. Is the Alf Christmas
album. Oh, I knew it.
Ding, 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 ding.
All right.
Hold on. A Two Live Crew song came on at my gym the other day.
What?
And I was like looking around. So like horny? They were like playing like Spotify or something, and it was like old school rap. And a Two Live Crew song came on. And all of their songs, I'm reminded, are basically about committing fucking rapes. Like, this is not... This was not cool what this Two Live Crew was up to.
Yeah.
It was a little bit.
Yeah, much. They were very rapey.
Okay. Yes.
Well, while we're talking about sex, I've got mostly real and one fake Christmas porn.
Oh, I love these. I actually have seen a Christmas porn featuring an elf that was sexing everyone. Okay, go on.
I wish you didn't tell me that.
All right.
It was a long time
ago. I'm going to give you a bunch of porn titles. You're going to tell me one of them is fake. I Saw Mommy Eating Santa Claus.
real.
It's a Cumderful Life. Barely Legal Bitch That Stole Christmas. Santa Claus Is Coming All Over Town. Spend Xmas in My Ass. Yo, 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 A Very Black Christmas Tale. And Tranny Claus.
Tranny Claus? Okay. It's either Tranny Claus or It's a Cumderful Life. Kate McManus, what say you?
I'm going to go with the Yo, Yo, Yo one.
Jason Stewart?
The Cumderful, that doesn't work for me. I need to call.
I agree with that one. It's a Cumderful Life.
Yeah, you're right. Cumderful Life.
It is. Okay, Ed, you got one more?
No, that's all I
got. Okay, excellent job. Herman Marshall Whiskey. We dig things that are real. Okay, guys, it is time. We need to talk Brady Bunch, A Very Brady Christmas.
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls.
Guys, I don't know. We talked earlier about how we used to wait for the Christmas specials to come on, those stupid claymation ones. The worst of all, of course.
Those dumb raisins.
Yeah, a Charlie Brown Christmas. We talked about the Yogi Bear one, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, all of those. This one came out in 1988, and I'll just give you a brief synopsis of A Very Brady Christmas. Came out in 1988, made-for-TV movie based on the Brady Bunch, starring most of the original cast, Robert Reed, Florence Henderson, Ann B. Davis, Barry Williams, Maureen McCormick, Christopher Knight, Eve Plum, and Mike Lookinland. Susan Olsen, Cindy Brady, was not available as she was on her honeymoon with her first husband at the time. She was replaced by Jennifer Runyon.
Major upgrade there.
What up? The film also incorporated two cast members from the Brady Brides, which was apparently a thing. Jerry Hauser and Ron Coolman, who were the two husbands of Jan and Marsha. The plot of the movie we will get into. I will just say this. When the movie first aired, it was the highest rated TV movie of the season with a 25.1 rating and a 39 share, which is basic, which would like
that's insane.
Blow away Sunday Night Football these days. Like that is a massive rating. But ultimately finished as the second highest rated TV movie of the season. Based on the movie, they launched a TV show in 1990, The Bradys, which was based on the characters' adult lives. It did not do well. Only six episodes were produced. It was right around the time of 30-something, so they started calling it Brady-something. Didn't work. It ended. We should talk about the movie because it is fantastic. It is a holiday classic, and it starts out Mike and Carol, as it should, the Brady parents that, you know, their significant others died back in the 60s. They moved on and they started a new blended family with three boys of his, three girls of hers, and now they're empty nesters and we catch up on them. They start the show, start the movie, and they're exercising together. They're riding exercise bikes, and I feel like we need to begin with the fashion, the 1988 fashion. Ed Daly, your thoughts.
Carol was very 80s dressed, and it seemed, it wouldn't totally work today, but like it was what a woman in the 80s wore.
Shoulder pads.
Mike was also wearing what a woman in the 80s would wear.
That's exactly right. His Mike.
The low cut top, none of it worked.
And a very long under t-shirt.
He had.
And a crop top jacket.
He had like a loose necked workout t-shirt, something that you would see Richard Simmons wear. And then he had a Lecoq Sportif jogging suit on. And as has come to be known, Bob Reed was a gay man.
And he was a gentleman at the piers.
He clearly decided he was never on board with the whole Brady show. He fancied himself a thespian. He was not one of these people that was down with the silliness of the Bradys. So when he came back, they paid him to do this movie. He had to just decide, I'm going to fucking play it gay, because he plays the whole movie as a super gay man. Jason Stewart, your thoughts?
On that last point, yeah. I mean, you could tell that the kisses, I mean, this was like a 2 hours of making out. There was a lot of making out, and his kisses on his wife were by far the most awkward, unnatural-looking kisses of the bunch.
No chemistry.
And they made Carol super randy in this one. She was going
Carol loves
it. She was going for it every step of the way.
He wanted to get to the
office. And he's got his hands
office.
On his hips, and he's like, my stars.
Yes, yes.
He gives her a kiss. He's yes. trying to get away from her in the kitchen.
Yeah.
She's suggesting that they
go upstairs. She was trying to fuck him a lot.
He gives her a kiss and tells her to make it last.
Yeah.
Because he's probably not going to be doing that
again.
He
was not into
soon.
It. He really wanted a spinoff where Mike Brady comes out of the closet. And I feel, hold on. We have some tape from the producers backstage. This is backstage of the Brady, a very Brady Christmas movie. Let's go to the producers right now. Hey, Bob, could you butch it up a little bit? And scene. Okay.
Can I point out, first of all, I mean, to put a button on that opening scene, which was just weird, they're exercising. And they share the information that they both got each other exercise bikes for Christmas a year ago.
Yeah.
And then she, as they're comparing how long they've been on the bike for, she says, I've gone 2 miles. Yeah. What about you? Isn't 2 miles, isn't that equal about 7 minutes on the bike?
Yes, yeah, about that.
Yes.
I lost track of time.
Two, like a good bike ride's like 15 miles. And she's done two, and he did 6, and he was really, really proud of himself.
Correct.
I like when he walks into the kitchen and says in a very gay way to Carol, where is my checkbook, with his hand on his hip.
Yes, yes, a lot. Yeah, he had that hand on his hip a lot.
Checkbook. I love that.
Throughout the movie. Okay, so the Brady start assembling the old crew. You know everyone's going to show up, and who shows up immediately? Alice, Ed Daly, what did you think about Alice's cry face when she showed up?
My goodness, that was the ugliest looking person I've ever seen. We now know why Sam the Butcher left her. That cry face was horrible.
Also, she looks old as fuck. They did not obviously have Botox or like retinol skin creams back then.
And she died like this year and she was like 80.
Yeah, she was in 1988. She would have been 62.
Also, I have a question. She comes to stay, and she brings her work uniform with her, even though she hasn't worked for them for X number of years.
Well, that
she immediately puts it back on.
That struck me as kind of odd because they immediately put her to work. They send her to the airport.
Why does she have her work outfit?
Bring home
Why
the
does
whole
she
family?
Have that maid outfit with her?
How about the first morning they take her in, and Alice walks into the kitchen and Mrs. Brady has made Mike eggs and like just let Alice stare at it.
Yeah, she's basically an indentured servant.
you can be a shoulder. We'll be shoulder to cry on, but you're gonna have to earn your keep around here.
So we go around the country and we see all of the. We start to get a peek into the lives of the Brady children and what they're up to these days. Marsha, who's
looking good.
Yeah, she's held on to her fastball. Like she still looks pretty good. But unfortunately, she's got a sad husband, and she's wearing a pale pink grandma pantsuit with period appropriate shoulder pads.
Why would she marry that guy?
Yeah, she's hanging out with her husband.
Bad casting.
Her husband's lost his job. He may or may not be on coke. It's tough to tell.
He may or may not work at Willy Wonka.
I feel like he did a Miami
toy factory.
Vice. Yeah,
he worked a lot in that. I mean, he was killer in Slapshot.
That's right.
But he worked a lot in that era.
Yeah,
mostly on coke.
Jason Stewart, your thoughts?
The main issue Marcia. I had with this scene is that he comes home to Marsha, who definitely is looking hot.
Yeah, she looked real good.
And they have this like inappropriate discussion in front of two kids that like my life is over, I lost my job, what the hell are we gonna do?
Yeah. We have
isn't it the parents' job to be like, like the I don't know, the air waitress on the airplane that's not supposed to freak out when the plane is having trouble.
Parent of the year. He's telling his kids his life is over.
Also, Wally is a huge baby.
Yeah, he's
about losing his job.
Yes.
Not attractive.
He's probably worried that he's not gonna be able to afford any more perm activator now that he's lost his job at the toy factory.
Right.
That's some quaff he's sporting.
Big time. Okay, then we check in with Greg, who is a doctor. He's an OBGYN. I think we know what that means. Mm-hmm. That tells us what he loves to be around. And he's got a soup sifter mustache that's very off-putting. And his wife, who is the same broad that played the new Gidget, for those of you from the 80s.
Wow. Nice.
She's his nurse.
Attractive.
Yeah,
way more attractive than that guy.
Yeah.
Is it commonplace to have the same facial hair as your dad?
It was a little weird.
Yeah, very weird.
They both have the same.
Especially since the dad was trying to tell us something.
Then we move on. We check in with Cindy. Cindy is going to U of A, and this is where we learn we've upgraded from the original Cindy, Susan Olsen, to Gwendolyn from Charles in Charge. And I think I speak for all the guys here when I say huge, huge, huge upgrade.
And major.
The highlight of the movie.
Yeah, for sure.
She's a hottie.
And she's cute. I love her college attire as well.
Well, yeah, that is a good thing. She goes to U of A.
The way they've dressed her is hysterical.
So you know that she's down for whatevs. Like, she wants to go on a ski trip instead of going home to her family, and that's not an accident.
And who's pushing for the ski trip?
Her black friend.
Lightest skinned black girl they could find.
Right.
Well, that might be the first black person in the history of the Brady Bunch.
I think you might be right.
Good point. Yes.
So the writers are like, we got to put a couple of black people in here. And then they're like, well, what do we know about? We know about skiing. So, all right, have the black girl be into skiing. It's like, yeah, you're not really capturing the full experience of the black. Because I'm not saying no black people ski, but I know that black people are not the driving force of the ski movement.
Also, the other black person is Bobby's race car.
Yeah. Another great point. Oh. Another
race car guy.
Another excellent point.
So the writer's room was still very white.
Very white. I would agree with that. Excellent point. Peter, we learn, is banging his boss. And
another good score.
He's emasculated by that. She's handsome, not bad looking. But again, he's super put off by he's a big baby, just like Wally. He's a real pussy about the fact that his hot boss makes more money than him.
Yeah.
Which really kind of dates this TV movie, right, as far as
I
agree. Totally does.
Because nobody would care about that today.
No right, one, yeah.
You want more money in the household. You know?
Right. Yes.
You don't want less just for your pride.
I'm rooting for all of us here. Like,
also,
let's
if you're a guy that's emasculated by the fact that your girlfriend makes more money than you,
huge pussy.
Like, take a don't, good
don't you feel
look
like
at yourself.
The people were setting up, like, they had the set, and they're like, all right, we need something for the background out the window. And they put, like, the middle of the desert behind her office.
Yeah, huge cactuses.
Something
yeah,
was, like, giant cacti. Been, like, a city landscape. Yes. And they're like, oh, well, we only have the desert. And they're like, all right, fuck it. She works in the middle of the desert.
Well, yeah, they're all they had to show that they're all spread out across the country. Now, along the lines of Cindy and Jason Stewart, you'll understand this. Peter really hung on to his looks. I mean, this guy's a backdoor slider. Is this?
Definitely.
Would you classify this guy, Jason Stewart? Would you say that he's gorgeous?
He's a good-looking guy. I could say that he held on to his looks and he held on to his height from the age of 13.
Yes, he's.
Hey,
he's still
that's
I stopped
the reason
growing
why he
when
wasn't
I was
promoted
14.
To his girlfriend's job. There's a glass ceiling on guys that
if he has anything to feel emasculated by, is that he's 6 inches shorter than
yes,
her.
he's like 5'6".
Can we just backtrack quickly?
Yes.
When Carol goes to the travel agent and
that hasn't
she
happened
sits
yet.
Down,
yeah.
Why does she hand over a cashier's check
yes.
and say, I hope this is enough for a trip that she hasn't even planned yet
right.
with
right.
the travel agent? Right. Yeah. What was that?
How did she know how much to have the check made out for?
She just she withdrew all the money and gave it to the woman and said, I hope this yes. is enough. Here enough it is. For what?
Yes.
There's more to be spoken when they get to the office, but we got to introduce everybody.
Okay.
But on Kate's point, and again, another peripheral kind of point here is, I don't know what dates this movie more: the Peter being jealous of his girlfriend's salary and position, the payphone at the race car track, yes.
which Bobby has all his calls forwarded to,
yes,
or people using travel agents,
right, right,
right,
or paying with checks.
And Carol doesn't know how money works because she's a woman; she's super dumb.
Or the rose and pastel blue decor in the newly remodeled Brady residence.
Yeah,
So we check in with Bobby. Bobby, we learn, has dropped out of school to become a race car driver. He's, as much as Peter has hung on to his looks, Bobby looks like he's weeks away from joining Mike Brady in the AIDS hospice. Would you guys agree?
He's got that Aaron Moran, Joni Cunningham hair as an adult. Like, he's bad got that hair. Fried hair.
Yes.
It's not looking
he's
good.
He's looking pretty NASCAR to me.
And
I think Mark Hamill, after watching this movie, was like, man, Bobby should have stopped doing TV or movies in 1977.
And speaking of things being dated, I like that Bobby's buddy thinks the Indy 500 is an attainable goal. He's like, that'll probably take a couple years.
Yeah.
And
they're on some dirt track. In
yeah,
the middle
dirt
of
track.
Yes, they're like out in Irwindale. And I also like that in 1988, aspiring to become a race car driver is like the worst possible thing you can tell your parents. And that he's majoring in business administration, and the Bradys seem to think that will somehow equal a big-time Wall Street job like Ed used to have.
if that movie was made today, it would be like, Bobby's into snuff porn now. Yes, like, it wouldn't,
yes.
It wouldn't be race car yes. driving. They would really make it a little more risky.
Bobby's selling meth at the racetrack.
It's kind of... It's...
Then again, he is on a payphone, so maybe he was doing that.
That's a good point.
It is ironic that Bobby is ashamed to tell Robert Reed that he's a race car driver.
that's a really good point. Okay, then we move on to Jan, who
is rocking her mom's hairstyle.
Continues.
It seems like the same bitch she was right, in 1970.
Continues to be just the biggest drag in the Brady household, along with her husband, Philip, who's some sort of an academic, and they're having marital troubles, right, Ed?
Yeah, and you know what's also troubling? And this is something my parents did with my grandparents. I don't like when the spouses are calling the other spouse's parents mom and dad.
Also,
I don't like that.
Carol calls and she's like, "How's Philip? Let me speak to him."
Right.
What the fuck is that? Like, hey, tell him I said hi. You don't actually get on the phone on purpose with
your
in-laws. No,
he's the man right. of the house. He makes a decision about the trip.
Oh, wow.
Not Jan.
Right.
The good. Mom has to go straight to the man of the house.
Interesting.
And can I say right now that Eve Plum, of all the actors here, more than Robert Reed even, I think fancies herself a very well-polished actress, and she put a lot of effort into like making herself over for this role. She's really ugly, and but you could tell the haircut's very expensive, the clothes, the makeup, and she takes herself very seriously.
Well, they're cashed up. Like, they got money, and that hairdo was like straight out of 1981.
She has to do that every day.
Couldn't be easy to do. So they all decide, it's decided that the mom and dad, Carol and Mike, are...
will forgo their trip to the Orient.
Right. Well, but, all right, and so now Greece. Let's go back to the travel office.
Yeah.
They each have plans, like they want to do a secretive plan where Carol wants to take him to Greece, which I'm guessing Mike is interested in the musical Greece, not going to Greece, but
well,
and then
you know
he wants
what
to
was
take
invented
her to Japan,
in Greece.
But either way... he cashes the check earlier than she does,
exactly.
And so they're like, "All right, sorry, Mrs. Brady, you're out of cash." And they say, "You've got $8 in your bank account." Now these are people in their 60s that have just spent down to $8 to go on a vacation.
Right. Well, they, no,
it's a special
it's their vacation. Yeah, Jason Stewart's got it. It's their vacation account.
No, they didn't say that. They said your savings account. So they're saying they're cool with spending up to their last $8. And like, yeah, I gotta think the architecture jobs are winding down at this point.
Yeah,
I think. And he's got $8 left, and pretty soon, I mean, I don't know what it was cost, what it was priced then, but the AIDS medication is going to be pricey, AZT. And he just spent his last $8.
How much do you think they had saved? I'm gonna say
$10,000.
No, I'm gonna say $20,000.
Really? That's yeah. That's a baller trip to Greece.
Or 15.
Or Hapone.
Maybe it was.
I'm gonna say $8,000 to $10,000,
and then they just blow it all on having kids and their kids. I mean, you're an empty nester. You're living the dream.
Well,
now you're bringing all these shitheads back.
She sold the land. She's in real estate, and you know she's in real estate because I quote, she said, and I quote, "I don't have to go to business today, and you don't have to go to business today," which is a weird. I feel like maybe they had some Koreans writing. They farmed out the script to some Koreans.
We go to business?
Because yeah, I've never heard anyone say they don't have to go to business, except for these two. But she said that she got the commission on the land that Mike Brady is designing the office tower on.
Oh, it's so, double dipping.
Yeah, she's double dipping.
Very unethical. Very un-Brady of them.
Very unethical.
She just recommended him.
But that's probably a couple $1 million sale. She probably clocked 150, 200 grand off that deal. Like, what are they doing with their money?
Mike, we go to business?
I don't have to go to business. Okay, so eventually, and we all know this is the way this is going, everybody comes to the Brady house. There's a montage. Alice is dispatched. Alice, who does not work for the Bradys anymore, is dispatched to collect everyone from the airport.
Get the fuck to the airport. Yeah. You're on pickup duty.
LAX.
Why was she dispatched? Because it will take the entire day to assemble like 10 beds and couches sheets and pillows that they
have. Where the hell did all those mattresses come from? Where did they come from?
How are they storing so many mattresses?
They have like a big mattress like storage unit.
Great.
Hey, Alice, since you can't keep a man happy, we're going to put you to work if you want to be around people on Christmas.
It was a very strange montage. She goes to the airport to pick everyone up. The Bradys, the two older Bradys, are assembling the house. They have like army cots on hand. They have oodles of mattresses. And despite the fact that they have thousands of extra mattresses to set up around the Brady household, Jan's husband still ends up sleeping on a chair, half in a file cabinet, half on a chair.
And Marsha and Wally have to sleep in twin beds.
Yes, very odd. I did like the montage, though. I especially liked Greg carrying his young adult son off the plane. I mean, the kid was like 13, and he's being toted in his dad's arm. And geriatric Alice, who's no longer employed by the Bradys, is dispatched to collect everybody.
And don't like some of the kids let her carry the bag.
Yeah, she comes inside with carrying all the luggage. Yes.
Here you go.
Hey, go get it, you stupid maid.
Then they all meet up and a Christmas tree is collected and
the douche chills.
Boys come in, the gentlemen come in carrying the Christmas tree.
Caroling.
All together, caroling along to deck the halls. Only to have the women respond to sing the next verse. I felt like
while they're carrying dishes from the kitchen.
Yes.
It was awful.
I felt like I was at home. I felt like this was everyone's Christmas. Like, who hasn't
everyone related to that scene,
caroled
big time
in rounds with their entire extended family? I mean,
it's funny. I thought the singing was kind of out of context as well. But then it got me to thinking about episodes. Like, they devoted like multiple episodes to their singing endeavors, whether it was Peter having a sickness and he had the high voice thing going on that one episode.
Right, time to change.
Yeah. Oh, and then you had Greg Brady, who was being allured to be a solo artist. You had the episode they referred to, which was one of the first episodes of them singing in the church. It kind of made sense to me And then obviously we're going to get to the point where the singing literally saves a life, which
that's right.
At that point it gets a little that's ridiculous, right. But go ahead.
Yeah, there was, it was a musical show, and that's exactly right, Jason. They were trying to tie back to their musical roots when they had a group, like there was a lot of singing going on in the 60s apparently, and they were continuing that into the 80s. We get a little bit of the story where we learn that Mike, who's been recommended by his wife who sold the land, has designed a building that they're building, and like all shady contractors, the builder that Mike's working for,
Ted Roberts
is working on the margins.
Yeah, he wants to cut some corners. And Mike, who, despite the fact that he may have caught the HIV at a secret bathhouse run, is very above board on all things.
He's, at this point, he's probably at least got a touch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He might not be at full blown.
I wouldn't say FB, but he's
got a cough.
He's on the fade,
and he's seen his doctor about the cough, and the doctor's gonna run some tests. That's all. That's all we know at this point. He doesn't have the full blown variety, but it's close. So to me, the best part of the movie comes next. It's when everyone's got problems. Wally's can't get a job. He's lost his job.
He's still in bed whinging about it in front of their kid.
Yeah.
Again.
Peter and Bobby have a talk. And of course, the most memorable scene in the movie, Peter and Bobby are talking about their lives. And Peter, for an inexplicable reason, is wearing a nightgown.
And for like 10 minutes, too. This was a long scene because they take it to the kitchen.
He has a 90 on.
Yes. What?
Nobody mentions it.
No one is like, dude, what the fuck are you sleeping in? Did you pack that yourself? Like, why do you own that thing?
Is that your girlfriend's? What?
So strange. He's wearing a long flannel nightgown.
How about the big reveal in that scene? Like, they're talking about, I forget how they get there. Maybe you guys know the exact wording, but it was something about being a famous Bobby, and yeah. Bobby starts like running off like, these Bobby Unser and famous
Bobby
race
Allison.
Car drivers.
Yeah.
And Bobby Peter, Peter somehow from that like limited trivial knowledge of race car was like, wait a minute, something's going on here.
Yeah.
You're an expert on race car drivers.
He knew like two facts
about
a race car.
Average miles per hour. Something else.
Bobby says, it's a hobby. To which Peter says, if you're spending that much time on your hobby, how do you have time for your studies?
Yeah, they're very...
What?
They're almost like...
You know two facts about one thing and all of a sudden it's taking up all of your time.
But when somebody challenges you, you can't look across from them and be like, hey, what the fuck's up with that nightgown?
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't take you seriously right now.
Then they all meet up in the kitchen. Wally's gone down there.
This is the most upsetting scene to me personally.
Well, this is something I've never done in my life, and you see it a lot in TV, and I just don't feel like it happens. People who can't sleep go down to the kitchen and just start stuffing their faces in the middle of the night.
That is the opposite of what I would do if I couldn't sleep.
Wally goes down. He
for pie.
He gets a pie out of the fridge.
That's not covered.
He doesn't heat it up. He brings it straight to the table
with a huge knife.
With a huge knife, and then
for a minute tries to hide it from Greg.
Greg walks into the room. He hides the pie under the table, leaving him sitting with his hand on a giant knife. He's known to be depressed. he looks like he's about to end it all.
Yes.
Or
go on a murder spree.
If you were married to Jan, that would be a reasonable assumption, too.
Yes, but he's married to Marsha.
Okay, that's not the most. That's not the most upsetting thing. The most upsetting thing.
Wally's the sad sack toy guy.
Yes, we're getting people confused. Kate, you're onto something here. There's more people join the pie party.
Wally offers Greg some pie. Yeah. Greg says, "Yeah, sure." He takes the pie, cuts a slice, hands it to Wally. There are no plates. There is no forks.
Yeah, no plates.
The other guys come in. They all get handed a piece of pie.
Peter takes a slice.
And they hold it in their hands and just eat it.
They're all
like
handed
a sandwich.
They're all handed apple pie into their hands. They're eating
apple pie. What the fuck is going on?
They're like bulimics or something. They're just give me the pie. I don't care. Like, they're so lazy.
And I like, But then, I like, this is where they roll out Cindy's lame storyline. Like, they did a good job with upgrading Cindy, but then they couldn't think of a good storyline for her.
So she's like Cindy, yeah.
They're like, I wanted to go skiing, and everyone treats me like a baby.
I mean, they put her at the kids' table. That's pretty fucked up.
She's the same age as Bobby. But do you think that they were eating pie out of their hands because they're so lazy that they didn't have their slave Alice there to get them plates and they didn't know how to do that themselves?
That would have been a cool scene if somebody went and kicked Alice's door. Hey, Alice, we're eating. Get the fuck up.
Alice, we need some plates out here.
What are plates?
We've never known where anything goes. Get your ass to work. This is not a free stay.
Everyone seems to sort of work their things out overnight. Over one guy, I think it might have been Bobby, is straight up eating pie out of the pie tin with
Peter.
Oh, Peter, just with a fork.
Out of the tinfoil tray, he's eating the whole pie.
Eventually, after their first slice, somebody must have woken up Alice and they get some forks and knives.
No, because Alice doesn't know where the pies have gone the next day.
Oh, Jesus, that's right. But the next day, Carol comes in on Jan and Philip. And they're
sleeping in a drawer like a Japanese businessman.
He's sleeping half in a chair, half in a drawer. And when he goes to get himself up, he inexplicably pulls another drawer open.
Above his head, so that he's stuck.
Like, rather than just stand up, he grabs another drawer and pulls it open.
And how about knocking, Mom?
Also, yes. Carol Brady comes in the room, like, and in like two minutes, they solve all their marital woes.
Yeah, and they start to fuck
and start
in front
to make
of
up.
Their mom.
And she just goes... Right. You guys can be late
for
breakfast
and closes the door. It's one scene of maybe six or seven where they just start making out uncontrollably, inappropriately.
Yeah, Wally and Marcia at the Christmas dinner table, too.
Yeah, their marriage was just extended to like maybe February or March.
Yeah, there's a lot.
They hated each other. They hated each other. Making out's not going to solve this thing.
I agree. I totally agree. Okay, what else goes on? Oh, Mike takes Wally for a run, and miraculously their neighbor like owns some big ass toy company, as though there are two toy companies in the United States. We all know these things are fucking made in Taiwan.
Right, and this guy has such stringent hiring practices that the first guy who runs by with a blouse has a son-in-law, and he's like,
"You're good.
All right, I'll hire him." Yeah, we're good.
As if he does his own hiring of salespeople.
Yes. Very, very strange. They have dinner.
Also, he's watering his plants with like a watering can.
What is that?
These are simple people.
No wonder he's so quick to do a favor for Mike. Like, maybe they both take walks late at night. Maybe they have like a little bit closer friendship. Mike's got the outfit. The neighbor's got the watering can. A lot of signs.
I think that guy has a toy belt.
Oh, does he? A sex belt.
Sex belt.
Sex toy belt.
So they have dinner.
They have Christmas dinner. Alice keeps coming in. Her bad attempts at comic relief are one of the worst things about this.
Alice is a real
mess.
When
she keeps coming in and asking about the fucking pies.
Yes.
When she's not dropping shitty meat-related references to Sam, she's telling bad jokes.
Really?
And Mike gives the longest toast in history. Like, the food's getting cold, and he's still yammering on.
Well, he's a gay man, and they're very flamboyant. They like a lot of attention, so that doesn't surprise me. Yeah, they're very theatrical, exactly.
And then didn't he say, when he was pulled away, that he didn't finish his speech? It's like, how much more speech do you need?
Right, just shut the fuck up.
Yes. He really needed a soliloquy. He likes all the attention on him. The next day... Mike's got to go. There's problems at the work site.
At the business.
At the business. Mike has to go to business the next day. Carol doesn't have to go to business. Mike has to go to business.
Mike, you have business?
Mike is such a shitty architect. No wonder they're down to their last dollar. The fucking building.
$8.
The building that he's designed caves in.
Because Ted didn't take his advice.
And collapses.
But Ted kind of said, I go on the low end of the safety spectrum.
Yeah.
But like Mike designed a building that collapsed on day one. When Yeah. If you're like designing something like and it's a little bit less than safe, you would expect some wear and tear. It should last
more than one day.
Like it didn't even make it past the building process.
Right. Yeah, I mean it would at least stay up a few years.
Yeah, it should fall down in an earthquake.
Right.
Yeah, an earthquake, you're like, oh, you know, this is where you should have paid a little more on.
Right.
The building collapses on Mike, and so what is it?
Could I add that? Like, yes. So if we're to believe what happened. Building, the structure is collapsing.
Yeah.
And two people that are paid to work on Christmas are stuck.
Yeah.
Are stuck and they can't get out.
It quickly turns into a coal miner's story.
Yes. Instead of calling the fire department or calling the authorities, you call the architect? In what world is this?
They called Liberace at his family dinner.
That's a great point. And then the building collapses with everyone inside. Mike's in there, the construction workers. And
by the way, one of the nearby construction workers is wearing white jeans on the job.
Oh, that's not ideal.
No. He's probably not serious about his work if he's wearing white jeans.
Rather than call search and rescue and get the dogs and whoever goes to Haiti when they have a typhoon or whoever goes to Chile when they have an earthquake.
First responders.
Yeah. What do they do to rescue the guys inside? They have Carol break out a show tune.
But I mean,
they do a little flashback to the singing episode, right?
Right.
But this is after, I mean, they're expecting us to believe that these two poor guys that were stuck in there to begin with are rescued by Mike, but they are so selfish that they're not going to help rescue the guy that rescued them.
Yeah.
Mike is stuck in the building, and again, no one calls the fire department. They're just standing out there. The news crew is out there for hours with families.
Still no police.
And no fire department.
Yeah, but because they know they have Carol there to sing.
Yeah. And the guys are like, hey, that guy was getting grabby in there. We're leaving him in there.
Yeah, he got a little too handsy. That was the problem. Okay, so eventually Carol's singing saved the day. The Bradys were healed as a family. Everything
works out. And you know the reason why she signed up was she said, I'll do it if I get the big singing number that saves the day.
Of course. She was probably trying to work something out where she could get a gig in Branson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everyone was trying to make the next step in their career out of this.
Yeah. Broadway, here I come.
Yeah. Greg went on to box Danny Bonaducci in one of those celebrity boxing things.
You know that she was pitching Brady on Brady for years.
Oh, that's a great point. Right, yeah. That is a great point. Okay, that's it. That's the end of the movie. Anything else to add? We'll start with you, Jason Stewart.
All right, well, I had to bring up this note. It's my favorite exchange in the history of the Brady Bunch. It has nothing to do with this movie per se, but I was an avid watcher, and I could say this, that of all the episodes, my favorite reference is sports related. Wes Parker was a guest star
famous
on the show.
Dodger center fielder, Wes Parker.
Oh, I thought Drysdale.
First baseman. Yeah.
But it was Wes Parker. Drysdale may have been on another episode. Joe Namath was on another one. Yep. But Wes Parker was dating Greg's math teacher.
Right.
Greg's grades were not well. And Wes Parker pulled him aside and said, hey, Greg, if you get your grade up in math, I'll get you tickets to the big game.
Yeah.
Which in baseball, there's 162 games. And
really put himself out there.
What is the big game? Which big game is circled on the calendar in 1969 or 1970?
Back then, you could take the whole family to Dodger Stadium for about $12. Like, even a Brady sized family. Like that's not too big of a score when tickets are going for $250.
And the big game against the Astros.
It leaves himself an eternal out because each time Greg would be like, man, Wes still hasn't come through with the tickets. And he calls him up and he says, when am I going to get the tickets? Wes could be like, the big game. We haven't had the big game yet.
It's not the big game.
Eternal cheapskate.
Not the big game yet.
But anyway, that's my tangential story. And I will say this. This was about as expected. It kind of brought me back to the good old Brady Bunch days. There was a lot of nostalgia. Cheesy 80s. Some inappropriate making out and a couple sexual references that were a little uncomfortable for me. But overall, it lived up to everything that you would think a very Brady Christmas would be. And I would recommend showing your preteen, early teen children this show.
Absolutely.
And on the Facebook page, or if people aren't on Facebook, ABC Family, if you just do Google ABC Family Very Brady Christmas, they have the link. And just watch even for the first scene where you see them exercising.
The 2 miles.
That alone is worth watching.
You should show it to your kids just to show them how much we were starved for entertainment as children.
Because this got this past that and what we would watch kill for these days.
Yeah, it was the second highest rated TV movie of the year. It killed. Kate McManus, your thoughts, your takeaway. Tell me, what did you think of A Very Brady Christmas?
I think that was the first time I'd watched it. I think I've seen clips before.
Did you not have this in Australia?
We did, but I think that I had outgrown.
Right. You were not sitting by your TV.
The show by the time the Christmas special came out.
Waiting for this to be on a daily myself.
The last thing I can think of is I couldn't believe how bootleg their Christmas lights were on their house.
Great point. They had a shitty, shitty Christmas light display on their
house. It was a sad
situation. What was
situation?
Going on? Was it just sparse?
Sparse. The lights weren't lined up. It looked like Mike had hung them, and he didn't, obviously, he cuts corners on the Christmas lights.
That's right. He was not a craftsman.
No, clearly.
For a gay man's house?
Clearly
I
not.
Mean,
it was embarrassing. Ed Daly, you have encyclopedic knowledge of everything from the 1980s. Give us your final thoughts. What did you think about A Very Brady Christmas?
My favorite thing anytime we review a movie or TV show is Battle Royale. Okay. Who wins people? Because I don't see anybody that's impressive. So who in a fight to death, you put all of the characters in this movie, who wins?
Oof. I have one. Should I go first?
Go first.
It's clearly Carol Brady. Everyone comes in, they get in a fight in the living room, guys are knifing each other. Well, first of all, the husbands, huge pussies. They go down first.
They're all pussies, yeah. Every one of them.
That Wally gets speared through the neck with a Christmas tree. Jan takes out that Philip because she's fucking hated him this whole time. Mike Brady's cowering in a corner. He's got his hands in his head. People are falling down left and right. Whoever's left, all of a sudden, they feel something, a vibration. They look to the kitchen, and there's fucking Carol Brady singing a hymn. It explodes everyone's eardrums. Everyone's heart stops, and the last five combatants drop dead in the center of the living room. Carol Brady wins in a battle royale.
Their eardrums are bleeding like in Heat when they blast the armored car.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason Stewart, who do you like?
I think Bobby, he's
a race car driver.
He's like a brawler. He would win in a scrum.
I will say this.
His looks will offend his opponent.
That's right. He clearly doesn't care about his looks, so he wouldn't be protecting the face.
Based on the airport scene, he only clears Cindy and Alice's height by maybe half an inch. He's lucky if he's 5'4".
Yeah, I kind of like him, though. He's scrappy, and like I said, having to look at him would cause you to capitulate.
Be tough to fight. You'd hide. Kate McManus, you are not the fighting type, but if you had to pick one, you're Australian, you're feral. There's probably a lot of bar brawls where you come from. Who wins in a battle royale between the Brady Bunch family, the cast of A Very Brady Christmas?
Look, I feel like she might seem like she's softened, but Marsha ran things back in the day, and she would pick up her place again, and she would run it.
Yeah.
And she was flying high on booger sugar for most of the
season. Yeah, she liked to do a lot of coke.
She ran that house. She was in charge.
Yeah, good for her.
She got her way.
Yeah,
she would get her way.
Hey, I'd let her have her way.
That's right.
With me. Mm-hmm. Ed Daly, your thoughts. Who wins a battle royale?
This is an easy one. There was only one person who did the work around there.
Alice.
She carried the bags. She carried Bobby's bags. Race car driver couldn't even carry his own luggage.
Big pussy. He's like 5'1".
She knew where all the utensils were. She knew where the corkscrew was, the knives were. She knows where the weapons are. She wins.
Wow. She couldn't find the pie, though.
And the first to die are going to be all the husbands because they were the biggest pussies on earth. Pussies.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. Excellent job, everyone. I really appreciate it. Jason Stewart. Hey, Jason. FYI. Yes. We're a couple weeks out from a new Bachelor.
Oh, wow. When does that begin?
Bachelor Ben.
In January.
Yeah, I think it's a couple weeks out. It might be one of the first episodes of the podcast in the new year.
Hell yeah.
We need to discuss The Bachelor. This is the Bachelor show of record.
Now, I'm sure Ed already knows this, but Ben, he is so boring. He's a nice guy, Conker. A gentle guy.
Is he more boring than the farmer guy you talked about?
Well, that's a great.
I feel like he's not going to be as nice as we all think.
Well, I just assume since he's so dull, they're going to really, really like sweat it up and crazy.
I feel like there's going to be a little bit more to Ben than we think.
They need to get some crazy bitches.
I don't know how you're going to beat one of the featured contestants having admitted sex with somebody during the season. I don't know how you top that, but they have to. So yeah. We'll see what happens.
Interesting. So we will have you on for that, Jason, for sure. If we can book you. Thank you very much for doing the show. Kate McManus will have to have a look at the new Bachelor field before that.
Yes, for sure.
We will look Let's to you that. For to provide oh, us yes. with that information.
I would love
the,
to.
The listeners love the Bachelor segments. Ed Daly, fantastic job. As always, thank
Great
you.
Great job, all of us.
Oh, absolutely. We're killing it. I mean,
it was weird how we sounded so good, yet so good looking.
It's really, we're a special, special group. And it's like we get better every week. It's ridiculous. It's I'm a little embarrassed by it,
right?
Yeah.
A little embarrassing because maybe we came at it a little too good tonight.
We're basically the Neil deGrasse Tyson of the podcasting world.
Fuck that guy.
Like we're like so above
Why does
everyone
Ed
else.
Hate Neil deGrasse?
We need to. We discuss it. We're not. Basically, we all need to get matching vests and just do the show in our vests. That would look hot. Okay. Excellent job by all of us. Thank you guys very much for listening. This has been episode 101 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast.
And hey, have a Merry Christmas.
That's right. Have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Happy Holidays.
All right.
I want to say Happy Holidays because I love when people get pissed off like there's a war on Christmas. Well, like anybody gives a
Happy Hanukkah.
I heard someone say that today where they're like, you're not allowed to say Merry Christmas anymore. And I'm like,
I'll say whatever the fuck I want.
Sure you are. Like I've never heard anyone get offended by Merry Christmas. It's not a thing. Also, that's a made up thing.
And also, like the war on Christmas. Like, do you go to any store in America? Like, Christmas is alive and well. Yeah.
Christmas is. If there's a war, yeah. Christmas is winning. About? I promise you.
There's a fucking war on Christmas, and China fucking won, dipshits.
Exactly. There's no fucking war.
There's no war on Christmas, and nobody gives a fuck if you say Merry Christmas to them. Anyone of any faith. No one gives a shit. Say Merry Christmas to whoever you please. Nobody cares. No. Least of all me. Okay. Excellent job, everyone. For special guest Jason Stewart.
Thanks, guys.
For Baller Lifestyle pop culture correspondent Kate McManus.
Thanks.
For Ed Daly.
Thank you.
I'm Brian Beckner. This has been the Baller Lifestyle Podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. We will see you next week.
Goodbye.